Episode of Cosmic Crit 2.0, the only Starfinder second edition podcast in the universe. That's hosted by me, Patrick, GM Patrick, and also the only podcast in all of time and history where we have the curious, the cat-like, the cabalistic player, Miles. Miles, how are you doing?
Doing good. Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing wonderful. Miles, how strange is this to be recording a one-on-one episode with me?
I was about to say it's so weird because you and I co-host a podcast together, but doing Cosmic Crit, I feel like very, very strange. Like I'm in a a single student in a large classroom, but I'm the only one that showed up. Like that's what it feels like.
There's the snow day and like they didn't actually cancel until you were already at the school. And then like, yeah, you know, we were having class.
Which actually happened to me at Wofford when we went there.
Yeah. How terrible is that? Yeah. No.
I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal. I walked the 15 feet back to my dorm, you know.
It was dangerous when it was all snowy and icy there. Yeah. 15 feet is like, I remember ice falling off of trees one day and I was like, this is how I die.
That's why I would also stay off the sidewalks because, you know, we had so much grass and it was less slick going that way.
Yeah. So we have recorded many one-on-one episodes together of Kaiju Versus History, the podcast where we're watching every kaiju movie ever made, and we are in our likely final season, full season, season 8 of the podcast.
Final with an asterisk on it.
When we're recording this, we are in the year 2024, so a couple years back, and there's not that many kaiju movies still left to watch. I think actually we're on to like 2 or 3, which is pretty exciting. But yeah, so we have done this many times, but we've not done Kaiju Versus History things besides that podcast one-on-one.
Right.
We have done this for Demon Rono Crits, our Pathfinder second edition podcast, but you were not on that. We had these one-on-one episodes with the crew that served as just background episodes, you know, a little bit of story, a little bit of introduction, a bit to the characters. Those were fantasy characters, and they kind of showed their, you know, what set them off on the path of adventuring, and in particular, the high seas, what got them to the Shackles, the piratey location of Galarion. And how eventually they would come together as a team. But yeah, I enjoyed those so much in that podcast. I did vow to try and bring those back for this podcast, the series one, which is kind of, you know, whenever we start something new here on Cosmic Crit, I try to bring in stuff that I've learned elsewhere and make the gaming experience a little bit better. And this is making the podcast experience a little bit better. We have some people out there, you know, already at this point, Miles, they might love Hithayun Delacour. They want more of Captain Hithayun Delacour. So,
well, if they're out there, I haven't talked to them.
But you guys have made some interesting PCs. I wanted to get a chance to dive in maybe into their backstory. And some of this you know about, and some of it you don't. So it is kind of like a little bit of a mystery as well.
Okay.
You know what happened? Are you ready to begin to tell the cat's tale of Hithayun, space adventurer, ne'er do well?
Let's do it.
How often does he do well? Ne'er.
I mean, he's not necessarily a ne'er do well. I
sometimes do well.
Yeah, maybe more in the chaotic good. I don't know.
Okay, that's a very art. Archaic system hasn't existed in Pathfinder for some time, too.
But I understand that, but I'm just using references that I know.
I know people get so angry. It's like, how can you call this person evil? It's like, oh, it's boy, pretty easy.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
This adventure, Miles, this week is going to start in the current year, in the current season, in the current day that we are playing Starfinder, where we found your characters on Eox, stranded on the surface in the Artraskan shelf, hunted by undead beasts, zombies, other creatures out here in the dead planet. And I think this is going to take place right at the Zephyrus shelter, as perhaps you watch over Tavra sleeping, the rest of your new compatriots taking watch, trying to figure out a way out through the rest of the wastes safely. Miles, we look over Hathayun's shoulder, and there is a shadow that seems to follow you around, almost just like right out of phase with your Patra character. It's kind of like a vague outline at times, a little opaque in others. It's a figure that you seem to be able to communicate with. For lack of a better word, we've called it a ghost or an entity on the podcast, I think. But yeah, indeed, nobody else seems to be able to see or hear it but Hathayun. How do you imagine it in your mind? I've given a lot of very vague kind of descriptions.
For me, it's something that Hathayun knows is there, but because this creature, this entity, is also, I mean, like, you know, supposed to phase in and out of existence, it's on some other plane, and their communication is not necessarily always direct. So I always kind of think of it as something that, I mean, Hathayun does hear, because, I mean, as he has constantly, like, spoken back to it, I would imagine it almost like a, I don't want to say a sleep paralysis demon kind of situation, but it's a shadow that, like, Hathayun sometimes thinks he sees in the periphery of his vision, but never quite sees.
Well, and if it is indeed your shadow, it's like usually in a spot where you just like can't see it. So
like it's one of those things that's always just quite out of sight for him, but he feels the presence.
Do you remember the scene in, was it Insidious, where the demon is like right behind Patrick Wilson's head?
Yeah.
It's like right there.
It's a great movie. I wish he didn't look like Darth Maul.
He always very Maul coated, but he's like, what if Darth Maul was sickly and gangly and
right? Like it's a great scene, and it's a, I mean, a well done thing. It's just, it's unfortunate that it happened post prequels.
Miles, what is this? It's a background that you've taken, right, for Hathayun. What is it? Just haunted, right? And that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a general background. I think we've tied it into the Drift a little bit.
Yes, it's part of the reason when I was devising the character to have Thayun be kind of a dual class, to be Prismeni, because I felt that it would be really fun for one to be a fun mechanical thing to do, but also it would be fun to see. Okay, this actually ties in with the fact that he's haunted, because he's constantly trying to be part of the Drift, because it's the one time the few times he feels like he's kind of in control of the situation.
Miles, what's it like finally making a character that probably has more thought put into it than all the other folks on the podcast? This is like people rolled randomly and, you know, picked some things and weren't able to pick them at the end.
I somehow just rolled rocks that one time this campaign, because it's not happened the rest, but I just was able to like pick exactly what I wanted, and it was one of those things where I was having difficulty coming up with the character, like, you know, I was initially really excited about Redacted until I started playing Redacted, and I got less and less interested in Redacted as time went. And so I was really kind of, I had a block. And so I think sometimes the best cure for writer's block is a deadline. And so when you're like, hey, we're doing this tonight, I was like, okay, let me sit down and think for a second and look at the rules and what I want for this draft. And I was like, all right, I want to be this, 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 and this. And I sort of created the character around the choices I made.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like you said, the Prismini and Haunted do work together, and that will come out in this episode. But as you're sitting here in the Zephyrus shelter, we watch as the form behind you kind of shimmers. And I, like I said, I like to think of it being as, I guess, less of a shadow, like on the ground, but just like a after image of yourself. Mm-hmm. Or another creature. Like sometimes it's taller, sometimes it's shorter.
Hithion keeping watch by himself?
No, I think other people are in the other corners, maybe of the shelter, looking out, trying to spot things in the distance. But that, you know, everyone but Tavra is awake.
This would be probably the first time like Hithion's felt like he's had a moment's peace since arriving on Eox, and I think he'd be a little surprised that until now, he feels like he hadn't felt the presence. So I feel like he would kind of mutter under his breath, like, well, guess he decided to show up. We've been here all of, what, 24 hours and not a peep?
I mean, sometimes indeed, I feel like maybe you felt it on the shuttle ride. It often pops in, like, trying to give you a very quick warning. Mm-hmm. And indeed, I think it's warning you in your mind right now about some of the other creatures outside on the planet Eox's surface, because this is indeed a dangerous situation. I think I explained it as potentially more dangerous than the long slog of season 3 of the podcast, which is some monster wrote that part.
Yeah, I can't imagine that person ever has anything to do with role-playing games now. Just absolutely monstrous. So My question is, would we kind of agree that, like, these warnings obviously don't always come out as words, but maybe feelings?
Yeah, I think it gives you a little bit of, or maybe this is just something that your character has, but synesthesia, where you can hear, like, the color of static in front of you, or you get a taste of, like, sad piano notes in your mouth, and it's like, oh, what is going on? And like, you can just sense it showing up behind you. And yeah, it's not words in your mind, but it is just like a perhaps some kind of psychic connection where you understand what it is saying or implying. But yeah, as it's warning you here, you're like, yeah, I'm sure.
I feel like Hithion would be like, you know, I especially, you know, and this goes with, like, you know, my bad roles, but Hithion's not been on his best performance since landing on Eox. So I feel like he's a little beaten up. I know he's healed, but he, especially if no one's really looking at him, he's not feeling he has to kind of show up, show out. He probably is kind of a little more embittered, like, can't be any more helpful, can you? You know, like, just you know, just frustrated because, like, yes, he senses the communication, but the lack of specificity. Like, I mean, to Hathion, he's like, yes, we're surrounded by danger. Thank you for pointing that out.
Once again, indeed, yeah, you've gotten this kind of warning many times before as you stare out of the Zephyrus shelter towards the darkening night sky above you. Your eyes fix on a star, and we see what looks like maybe a Solarian flare of photon attunement in your eyes, around your irises. And we are transported back 6 months to a small penal colony on an occupied planet in the vast by the Aslanti star system, the empire of the Aeon throne. We see smoke clears as pack stewards are helping an extraction team escort a large group of Screep Deeps and Gauze Claws away from the smoking remains of this prison camp. And a very large Lashuntan corporal in charge kind of comes up to you, where maybe you're also speaking with your entity, and says, oh, thank you for the assist, Hithion. We would not have been able to manage finding this place through the drift so fast if you weren't on that navigation's comms. Amosi was right. It's like, you know, drift space like the back of your hand.
Well, I wouldn't put it like that, but I do appreciate the sentiment.
Behind you, the entity is, I don't know, maybe like a mother scolding you, saying, you know, don't be so braggadocious.
Not now.
Oh, we got word that this planet was skeleton crew ever since the coup on New Thespera, and well, we've had to strike while the iron's hot to make tactical advances against the Aeon Guard where and when we can. If the green suits had time to react, they would likely have reinforced this planet with 1,000 guards ready for us. So time was of the essence, and we have you to thank for that. Behind you, the entity asks you to talk about the Vesk for some reason. The Vescarium.
Okay. Like, is it asking me, like, about my time in Vescarium or being under Vesk control, or...?
It's up to you. Do you want to ask something of this corporal?
I'm sorry, is this at the time that...
This is after Polonus was liberated.
Okay. So I guess Athian would be kind of curious, is like, what is the Vesk's role in this campaign against the Aeon Throne?
Oh, you've heard about that, have you? The Vescarium just declared war on the Aslanti Empire. Big things happening. Negotiations, I guess, with their new leader, Ishmarai Afir, broke down. And yeah, she's the Lasallan priestess who overthrew the twins in power and threw the Aeon Empire into chaos. Seems she's trying to make inroads into the Vescarium-controlled space and planets. And it seems like ever since the Vesk lost Polonus last year, well, they've been very excited to defend their space from an outside threat as opposed to a inside one. Yeah, you didn't
it's ironic,
have anything,
isn't it?
Did you have anything to do with that revolution?
I played a role, and that's all I am at liberty to say. But I do find it quite ironic that the Vesk take such issue with the Aeon Throne when they themselves were not too far from this sort of fascism.
Well, indeed, the entity behind you kind of flashes, and all of a sudden, we are back another 8 months or so in the humid jungles of your home world of Polonus. And we are mid-firefight as what seems like large buzzsaw-wielding tanks are slowly trudging their way through the mud, clear-cutting the rooftop villages of Scratch Post 7 as they go, chopping down these ancient...
Scratch Post 7!
And that's the name of it, I don't know what to tell you.
Oh, I love it. All right, sorry.
It's a small village, Ewok style, up in the trees. And yeah, they're getting dangerously close to cutting down the entire bulk of the jungle trees that make it up. You hear over a loudspeaker in these tanks a voice calling out. You can see maybe a Vesk on top of one of them holding a microphone.
Give it up, resistance members. High Despot Kavra draws orders you cease and desist from all anti-Vescarium activities here on Vesk 4. You lay down your weapons and come out now and submit to processing.
You're a good ways away from this, perhaps fighting off security robots, patrols, and things like that. Yeah, you hear the entity behind you explaining that a prison sentence likely means Vesk factory work for the rest of your life. I mean, it doesn't sound good, I'm sure. Do you want to work in a factory the rest of your life? In real life, Miles?
In either way, it's servitude to the Vescarium, and I will not have that.
You see behind you an injured Zeldin Gutteryung, the young old pup who is treating other Patra resistance fighters. You see Zeldin himself is wounded, is kind of hobbling over to his patients. He's gained powers himself in a raid on Command 6, and he's been unable to see at all since then. He's become more possessed than ever to help out with the Polonus cause.
It doesn't smell like we're going to win this one, Mr. Delacour, he says.
He's sniffing the air.
Yep, smells like a loss.
I'm sorry, I'm just...
That's Jabert. That's Jabert's voice. I know,
you doing the Jabert voice is throwing me off. And is this the first time that they're acquainted?
You guys have been fighting together for months now.
All right. Just let me gather my thoughts real quick. All right. I wouldn't put any thought into wins or losses.
We just need to get the job done.
Well, I think we're going to probably have to retreat. If you get these guys up on their feet, I can probably distract them long enough for you to try to make it away from these machines. Get back further in the jungle.
No, I'm not leaving without you.
The entity behind you says that that's a good idea, but you might be the only one able to stop this, Hithayun.
Oh, I'm not going to voice that out. I was like, we will give these people enough time to retreat, and we're going to show the Vescarium exactly what they're dealing with when it comes to the resistance. And if the fight comes to us, well, it's going to rain like the two of us.
Oh, smart and sexy. It's going to rain smart and sexy. I'll let you figure out which one.
Cats and dogs. It's going to rain cats and dogs.
How dare you? I'm a Vlaka, not a dog.
You hear the Vesk calling out again over the loud buzz of the tanks.
Come out with your hands up. If we see any one of you carrying a weapon, you will be non-lethally tasered into compliance.
At this point, Huthain is Solarian.
Oh, yeah.
So Huthain would likely kind of feign surrender, hands up in the air.
Carrying no weapons.
Carrying no weapons that they can see, with the intent of unleashing solar hell as soon as he's within striking distance.
Yeah, I think they kind of quiet the buzzsaws as they see you coming out of the underbrush, and it coming off of the tank, stepping down, is a very squat Vesk, maybe one of the shortest Vesk that you've seen. He is almost as thick and wide in his armor as he is as tall, like a big egg, you know, almost ready to topple over. Way overkill for... You have fairly low-grade weapons in the resistance, you know. This would definitely stop any bullet or laser blast. But, he comes over and says,
ah, I see you have the good sense enough perhaps to speak for your friends and have them survive. Are you here to surrender for all of them?
Me? Is that what I'm doing? Surrendering?
Well, I should think so. You're surrounded. Where we will destroy this village.
And it's at that point, I think Hithayun would make like a... He and Zeldin have probably come up with their own communication so that Zeldin can pick up when Hithayun is doing something stupid. Mm-hmm. And so since Zeldin can't see and little hand signals probably wouldn't be as precise for him...
You have to make a bad smell.
Well, no, he would just kind of like do a series of like snaps behind his head that they've kind of agreed upon, like the cadence and the rhythm. And it would be at that point where he finally would be like, no. This is what we call a distraction. And at that moment, he allows his solar fluid to manifest and attacks.
What kind of weapon are you using while on Polonus? Anything different?
I could see that he might have played with a couple. I mean, I've been playing with the flail. But maybe it's just a straightforward, like, dope-looking fire sword.
Go ahead and roll into the initiative turn order here for me. Because as you give the signal, I think Zeldin and maybe some of the other Freedom Fighters that have been healed up begin firing kind of indiscriminately around at back at the tanks, trying to draw their attention. This figure in front of you, this Vesk commander, says,
you shall pay with your friends.
You see him type some things into a wrist-mounted data pad, and two flying robots, little drones, pop up from behind the tank and come your direction.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to roll myself for some robots, little tech drones. And what did I roll? I rolled first, Miles. You are dead. They're gonna hover not super far off the ground. They're gonna be like getting in front of this Vesk. I think he uses them a little defensively and make some ranged attacks. They are slightly outside of, I'm gonna call this 30 feet between you and him. They got one attack each to start us off. Okay, well, natural one, natural three. on the first set of attack. So not great, not great. What was your starting armor class at level one? Do you remember? Was it 16?
I think it was like 16 or 15, but it could be a whole different ball game.
Oh, what? At that point. I rolled another natural one, but a natural 20 for the second attack, which is a crit for 7 points of fire damage. This one scores a massive blow, but almost as soon as this happens, why can't I stop rolling natural ones? Zeldin Gutter Young is behind you. He says,
I'm connected to you, Hathayun. Don't worry. I can take care of your wounds.
It is your turn, Miles, and you've got these two drones in front of you. What would you like to do?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he'll go for probably the drone closest to him first.
Okay, that is the one that crit, super crit, super critty. So it's an action to run on up to it and go ahead and make your second attack.
Did it not? There we go. It's a 12.
That is a miss. You have a hero point here if you'd like to
use. Sure. Actually, why not?
At this point, you've had full hero points. You're fighting on the planet. So first one, go right ahead.
17.
Okay, that is a hit, and that is, looks like, minimum damage here. A third action, what would you like to do?
Try and attack again, I guess. It's a 15.
That is also a hit, and 6 damage on this one. That is enough to knock out one of the two drones. And indeed, as it comes back around to your turn, you feel the burn wound healing up as you see a blindfolded Zeldin in the distance kind of reaching out. And he seems to be wincing in pain as your wounds are healing themselves. Go ahead. Oh, wait, no, it's my turn. This thing is right next to you. It has what looks like a robotic tail. It's going to whip around. It's going to try and sting you with it. So this is a melee attack. Oh, gosh, I thought it was going to be a 20 again. Next to it on the dice, an 8. That is a miss. So second attack. Oop. 13 is also a miss because it's basically the same thing. I've got roll 20 on this third. Okay, all three misses. Go ahead and take your turn. It is zipping and zopping around trying to get at you, but it's unable to.
All right, it's gonna
to sting you.
Take another sword attack. That's a natural 20.
We both got
with a like. It's all green.
It's a cosmic crit, baby. Natural 20 max damage. You could have killed this thing 4 times with this amount of damage. So I think, I mean, how do you want to describe doing it? Is it bifurcated?
Yeah, it's 100% a kind of, imagine like a Shoryuken from Street Fighter, but if one had a sword in hand, and that's kind of how this is playing out.
Yeah, so just a massive fireball that bursts as you're slicing this thing up. It falls to the ground and you hear the Vesk commander running away, the tanks kind of reversing, and indeed the Solarian weapon in your hand, the entity behind you tells you to be ready for more combat, but they do seem to be retreating as Zeldin comes up to you and you see is magically stitching together his own wounds finally, but looks very tired, maybe a little older, much older than his actual age. It seems since he started using his powers, he's seemed about a decade older than he was previously.
Oh, those powers of yours are pretty handy in a fight.
I tell you, Zell, we were just getting started. I don't see why they're leaving so soon.
Oh, it's a good thing there's no way to disarm someone that follows the path of the Solarian, I guess. Well, where did you say that you got those powers again?
I didn't.
The Wanderer behind you, almost acting as indeed a slightly delayed shadow puppet of yourself, showing your actions like a moment behind yours. You look back and it's almost as if you're looking in a reflection now. Like I said, oftentimes it's like a smaller figure, maybe feminine in nature, other times taller and lankier. But yeah, this one looks just like you, almost a mirror-like sheen to the entity. As in your periphery, you can see a few years back, we are transported even further back in time to where you started adventuring. The past, we find ourselves in the drift, You're part of a mercenary crew under Captain Lipsplish. What was the name of that mercenary crew that you are on, Miles? We're naming it right now.
The Dirty Hairballs.
Okay. Well, was it also a Patra captain?
Sure.
Okay. Is it everyone Patra mercenaries? After the war, you needed jobs. Right. The Dirty Hairballs are unfortunately under attack by pirates at this moment. An aggressive ship, a ship thief known as the Silver Spike Corsair, who it was rumored is a 100-foot-tall chromatic dragon, and their ship has breached the hull of the Dirty Hairball ship, and they're using smoke and gas to cover your advance, so you're in like the main corridor of your spaceship, and there's hot blue electrical blasts kind of splitting the fog of war as you and your crewmates behind you are trying to hold them back. You see crewmate Pronkins sweat profusely falling down his forehead. He's reflexively kind of ducking each time these pulse caster pistol blasts of stack electricity fly over his head. It's like, oh, Delacour! Oh, we gotta retreat! We gotta wait for the captain! There might be too many of them! This smoke is killing me! Okay, you cover me, and I'll get back, and I'll cover you when I get far enough down the corridor. Does that sound like a plan?
Yes. I will cover you.
As you stand to provide covering fire to Pronkins, enough time for him to run, there is a deluge of electrical firepower kind of concentrated on you and him all at once. Bam! You're shot in the shoulder and you feel it go limp. Maybe you drop your pistol for a moment. And then you watch as Pronkins snorts. His porcine alien is your crewmate here is cut down. All these electrical blasts hit him so hard his shirt catches fire and he falls to the ground. You see other crewmates falling down as well, as the hallway is just littered and you can hear advancing footsteps of these corsairs. What do you think? And this is before you get your powers here. Not much that Hithaeun can do in this situation. What's going through his mind is perhaps he's about to be press ganged or killed and in drift space.
I mean, I think that Hithaeun's not really thinking so much about the consequences of what's happening and is more kind of trying to read every scenario he can to turn it around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe is this like a last stand situation? Or you think you might be able to hide from these pirates?
I mean, I think at this point, that's the problem with Hithaeun, is everything's a last stand situation with him. Mm. I mean, which obviously informs how he behaves even in the rebellion. But he does, I think, have this long standing, I don't know if it's a chip on his shoulder or if it's just growing up under occupation. If anything other than living free is death to him.
Yeah, so as that's going through your mind, maybe better to go out in a blaze of glory. You stand to take aim where you last saw these arc rifle and pulse caster pistols blast come through the smoky haze. You indeed hear a ton of electrical fire and you maybe wince a bit thinking you're hit, but none of the shots seem to be sailing over your head or nearby. As you peek out of the bulkhead in front of you, it does indeed seem to be a massive creature standing in the hallway. What looks like a large four-armed angel, its skin an electric metallic that seems to shimmer, and see it absorbing this laser fire, this electrical fire here. And yeah, it seems to be floating a few inches off the deck, and you see what seems to be a radiation of green and purple light shimmering about it, a kind of toyancy of liquid light that indeed seems to brighten and pulsate as it absorbs more shots. Each shot it takes in of this, the Corsair's fire, it hums even louder here, what sounds like an unearthly chorus. And you can feel as the very bulkheads around you begin to ripple with this energy. And there's a mighty blast that kind of rips through the darkened, smoky hallway and blasts out towards the silver spike ship. And a moment later, you just hear bodies in the smoke falling to the ground, as it seems like it has taken out these pirate attackers. And yeah, the firing seems to have stopped. Indeed, this large creature who, like I said, it's kind of got like a metallic, almost mirrored skin that vibrates and pulses. It kind of looks like a music synthesizer or visualizer, you know. It kind of comes to the ground and turns around and turns its attention towards you, kind of looks in your direction. How do you think Hithyun responds?
Probably just with a smirk.
Do you say anything to it or no?
At this point, I don't think Hithyun is super mouthy. I mean, this is his earliest of early days, correct?
Yeah, this is one of like your probably first space adventures.
So, yeah, he may not be super, super, super chatty. He's still green, but he's also, I mean, he is witnessing this insane sight before him and is about to go into battle for, maybe not for the first time, but, like, at the same time, like, I mean, this is not something he would have ever expected to be involved in. This is still kind of blowing his mind. So, to him, this whole situation is just exciting. So, he is just kind of giving a smirk, his claws at the ready, and I mean, he'd probably just say something stupid like, let's dance.
Yeah, it does seem you're oddly calm here. Maybe you're overwhelmed with a sense of deja vu, as if indeed, like what is happening here, you are remembering a memory of this having happened before. But then as you go to say this quippy thing, or right after, your head starts to hurt, your senses overwhelmed by this entity, its very existence in this meat realm on the material plane of your starship, and its closeness to you. Your brain kind of wants to revolt, but as you're pained, it kind of reaches out one of its four hands in your direction, kind of like with an open palm to you. And maybe that the intensity lessens a little bit. What do you do as it reaches out a hand in your direction?
So it's just reaching out. It's not trying to attack, correct?
That doesn't seem to. It seems pretty chill. And I can.
Okay. So, I mean, despite that it might kill him, I think curiosity takes over. And Hithyun would also reach out his hand.
Here's some art for indeed these. This is a spectra. There's a few different kinds, but just like a cool.
Oh, yeah, they look neat.
Space entity. As you go to grab the hand, as you're about to reach out, a very large flame doshko kind of rips through this entity's back, the side and the back of this creature. It severs one of its opposing arms, which falls to the ground like a wet fish. And you hear a voice call out through the smoke and see this Vesk figure. Ah, ha, ha, ha. I guess you're not immune to fire, you ugly flame sucker. The Vesk plants a foot on this creature's hip and rips the doshko out like an axe from a tree trunk. And the drift entity begins to fall to the ground. But you are indeed able to grasp that outstretched hand for a moment. That feels like centuries. It feels like you freeze in place in time and space. You're inundated with feelings, smells, sounds that look like sunsets, tastes that feel like cold air conditioner. You're pulled back and forth over what seems like millennia as you watch in your mind's eye a black hole, a supermassive sun threatening to destroy one another, swirling through the cosmos like an unparalleled yin and yang for all of eternity. And all at once, you are transported back to your body. Your eyes light up, one of them with the fire of a photon sun, the other completely black and cold like the depths of a lightless drift portal. And indeed, as you concentrate on this Vesk in front of you, who seems to be bearing down his flame doshko, what do you make a graviton weapon here? What do you think is the first?
Yeah, I think graviton would be the way to go.
a purple sword to match his energy.
Yes.
Oh, it looks like you've got some fight in you. I'll give you that. But I just split that spectra in half like the dry driftwood in the Varanus Desert. You think you'll have a chance to stand against me?
There's only one way to find out.
The fight is epic. You know, it is the bodies of both your comrades strewn about you, the smoke-filled hallways. We've got a purple sword versus a flame doshko, but it is like you are a cat possessed. You've never moved this fast. You've never felt so powerful. And the entire time, it does indeed feel like someone is in the back of your mind whispering, move here, strike there, dip, dodge, dive, duck, and dodge. And before long, you're able to strike a blow that staggers this Vesk pirate back, maybe like a big slice of their meaty soldier, and they defensively step back.
Yo, well, you've bested me this day, Star Cat. Oh, but I'm sure we'll meet again.
You hear in comms, they call for a retreat, and indeed the captain of your ship begins to sound the all clear that the Corsair ship has begun to unbuckle from the hull break. And all of a sudden you're overtaken by a great deal of pain because, yes, you were shot also a few moments ago. And this is like level zero Thayun. But yeah, it does seem, as you look down to the ground to try and find the entity that seemingly saved your life here, they've disappeared. The creature, its material form has gone. No trace of it, but you are able to hear it in your mind. And as you turn around back on the planet Eox, you see that same kind of mirror reflection of yourself right in your periphery, right behind you and almost a part of you, opaque and dark and endless as a gravity well of a neutron star, but also bright and warm like a supermassive blue star shining its light upon you. Yeah, and this is the full origin story to Hathayun Delacour, power-wise. But I don't think that is the full story of Captain Delacour. But this was the inciting incident and something I think we talked about of how you got to be both Prismini and your Solarian powers. They're kind of like tied together, Miles.
Yeah.
And in the haunted background, I think when you made that character, I was like, oh, all three of these can kind of fit together pretty well. And yeah, now you are the captain of the Nova Rush. Do you think, having survived all that in your backstory, your character is much worried about this current adventure that you're on? Is this like another walk in the park?
I don't think he knows what he's gotten into quite yet. He definitely thinks this is something grander than he's done, at least recently. I mean, sure, he's been part of several, you know, rebellions and has kind of been an adventurer for hire, but this is something a little bit different. And he's certainly finding himself in with bigger stakes consistently, as opposed to like, oh yeah, there was this one tough situation, or, you know, outside of, you know, the rebellion against the Vesk. But yeah, I think there's something feels different about the current adventure that he finds himself on right now.
Does this have is this a better crew than the Dirty Hairballs?
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt.
yeah. Does Zeldin think, or does your character think, that you have some obligation to keep everyone on your crew happy and healthy, including your friend Zeldin?
Yes.
Excellent. Do you have a motivation to figure out who or what this entity was that saved your life? Seems to be sticking around.
Yeah, it's something that, like, I mean, because it became a part of his life for a little bit, he was constantly moving. It's not something that he would sit and think about. But as this adventure kind of goes on, and he finds himself at least consistently with this group of adventurers, Hathayun is starting to wonder the exact nature of his situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all the time we have for this adventure, but it's possible we'll do more one-on-ones.
Yeah, it was fun.
With you specifically. I don't know if it'll be backstory-wise, but I think we did two for each of the players in Dead Men Roll No Crits. And I don't think of them as filler. I think of them as a way to focus storytell a little bit without other people.
I didn't feel like this was filler.
No. Everyone should be. This is like where their character came from. And we did kind of start in media res this series without being like, here's how so-and-so got their powers. Like, no one's really given out a lot of backstory information. So this was always the plan, to do something like this and not have to say, it's like, oh yeah, by the way, so-and-so, this is Tavra's backstory, like when she introduces her character. I think we did something similar for the season one characters, but yeah. Right. So that's going to do it for this week's Cosmic Crit. It pains me every time I say that in this recording, Miles, because I've almost said the Kaiju versus History several times. That is it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for playing with me.
Thank you, Patrick.
We'll be back, I think, either to another one of these one-on-one episodes next week, or, you know, we'll just go back into the regular story and we'll intersperse these. I haven't figured it out yet, but this will be taking place in part two of Guilt of the Grave Worlds. So no matter what, folks, come on back and we will catch you here next week on Cosmic Crit. So long, everyone.
Good night.
This story is to be continued on the next episode of Cosmic Crit. Been listening to the Cosmic Crit podcast. The Starfinder role-playing game and its adventure paths are trademarks of Paizo. All Pathfinder and Starfinder images are property of Paizo and used with permission.